Hello and welcome to the international season of Dr. MedKI, a collaborative learning initiative between the AI Campus and the Charité Universitätsmedizin Berlin. My name is Marina Lex and I'm a PhD student in Professor Dr. Kerstin Ritter's research group at Charité. This season, we will explore medical applications and regulations with international experts around the world. In today's episode, we will be focusing on an AI-driven health tech startup from Zambia, which has the mission to transform access to maternal care for pregnant and nursing mothers in low-income communities of Africa. I'm excited to welcome Tafatswa Kalisto Munzwa, co-founder and CEO of Dava Health. Tafatswa, it's wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Marina. I'm excited to be here as well.
Great. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Tell us a bit about your journey from being a medical student to co-founding and leading Dava Health, one of Africa's most exciting health tech startups.
My journey, I think, began maybe now about 6 years ago. At the time, I was a medical student, and I've always been passionate about, democratizing access to care, seeing patients at the time at the teaching hospital. Coincidentally, my cousin got pregnant around the time. She was a first-time mom. You know, she didn't know how to navigate all these things, you know, the anxiety that comes with all that as well. So that was just, you know, the two factors that eventually led me to start thinking around was maternal care good enough for people like my cousin across, you know, the country, across the region as well. Then that's when we started thinking around how we could build something. So from there, collaborated with a few friends, some technical people like programmers, some public health experts. Then we started, piloting a few ideas we had in mind in trying to democratize access, one, and promote mothers who come for antenatal. So eventually all that work is what is evolved now to become what's Dava Health, which is a primary healthcare-focused health tech startup in Zambia. We are collaborating with a different number of partners. We have also incorporated a number of technologies into the service provision we are giving, where AI comes into now to try to help all that work we're doing. So, yeah, I think that's been the transition. Why I started Dava Health, how I moved from the medical training I was getting and, the problem I saw at the time, which eventually got us to realize how big it was across the region. And, now I've dedicated my work to try and solve that colossal challenge.
I'm excited to talk to you about Dava Health, your startup. But before we do that, maybe you can tell us something about the challenges maternal care faces in sub-Saharan African countries.
Yeah, so healthcare, our governments have tried to improve the last mile healthcare, provision and services over the years now. Maternal mortality has significantly dropped from, it used to be above 500 per 100,000 mothers. Now it has dropped to maybe around 250. Some countries it's around 170. But that's still not ideal for what the World Health Organization is targeting for maternal mortality. The target by 2030, it needs to be less than 70 mothers per 100,000 pregnant women who have any complications or eventually mortality. So you can still see that there's still a big gap between what the government has done and what still needs to be done. Me coming from the public healthcare system where I got trained, practiced as well, you get to see that there are certain challenges that are there from infrastructure itself. We operate in environments where the governments really have constrained budgets in terms of what they can stretch themselves to do, from public healthcare workers to public provision. So you see that the budget is minimum, so they just do what they are able to do. So that's where the gap now exists. You see that most mothers who go for their antenatal, most come late. In the region, generally, mothers start coming for their first antenatal around the fourth, fifth month. That's the average. Some even come as late as the seventh month when you are supposed to be delivering in 2 months. So if you are to have any complications before you present yourself to the health facility, you know, you don't know because you're not being constantly monitored. You know, so a lot of challenges go into why that happens from what you've discovered being in the field over, you know, the last 2 years or so. So there are cultural barriers that exist. There's infrastructure, like I mentioned. Some of our last mile clinics don't have some of the technology to be able to provide quality care. So you find out that a test like a full blood count or an ultrasound scan is not available to your local clinic. But how many mothers are able to move, you know, 80 kilometers, 100 kilometers to go to the nearest health center where there's an ultrasound scan? So those are some of the challenges. So you see that if, for example, a mother has what we call placenta previa, which is a low-lying placenta, so that's a risky pregnancy when it's on, they won't know until delivery because, one, either they presented late to antenatal or the antenatal clinic they were going to does not have the equipment to identify some of these risk factors. So those are some of the challenges you find that in the rural areas, in the slum communities, complications are a bit higher because of all these different factors that are coming together, from cultural norms to, you know, the technology that's there, to even the quality of the health workers that are there. You find that most trained professionals want to be in the big cities. You know, your doctors want to practice in Lusaka, in Ndola, which are the big cities. But what happens to those, you know, patients who are coming from these underserved communities, which are slum communities and eventually rural areas? So those are some of the challenges that are still there across sub-Saharan Africa, from, you know, the trends I've seen over the years now.
I assume that Dava Health is trying to fill this gap. Could you give us a 1 minute pitch? What is Dava Health?
Dava Health, in a summary, it's an AI platform that's utilizing last mile health workers to be able to close the maternal and child healthcare gap in these slum and rural communities. So essentially, we now incorporate a couple of technologies and everything else. But in a summary, that's what Dava Health is.
I read that Dava Health is based on two pillars, the Dava Mom app and the network of first level clinicians. Did I understand this right?
Yeah, definitely. So that's how the model we now have has evolved over the years to make sure it's an end-to-end solution. So definitely we have those two pillars.
Okay, amazing. Then I would like to start talking about the Dava Mom app first. Can you give us an overview on the Dava Mom app's features?
The Dava Mom app is a dual interface kind of application. That's how we've designed it. So it has the clinician side of interface. So these are, like you rightly mentioned, we work with clinicians. So they use the app to input data into the app and monitor the number of patients they are seeing, the risk level and all that. So it has that clinician interface, which is different from the, you know, patient interface. The patient interface is where the mother is able to now read what has happened per each triage or per each consultation if they have a smartphone. But one challenge we also got to realize as we were developing Dava Mom is that not all mothers in sub-Saharan Africa have access to smartphones. So how we eventually designed Dava Mom app is that it has what we call account shelves, where if a patient doesn't have a smartphone, you can still create an account for them, which sits in the shell, so that if they are to now have a smartphone along the way or any other time, when they come to register on the patient side of things, the information is already in the cloud. So it rightfully just comes into their app because of the credentials that they would have put. So the clinicians do all the triage, put the information on behalf of the mothers. So we have a number of parameters we are monitoring and using to kind of predict risk level of mothers. So we start with the demographics, which is just basically, you know, the name of the patient, where they're coming from. We use that in our analysis. You know, what's their age? That's what we consider as demographics. You know, some of them have their own risk percentage that they contribute. Then after that, we now have the clinical details we put in the app. So this include things like, have they had, is this their first pregnancy? If it's a successive pregnancy, was there any complication in the previous pregnancy? And in the current pregnancy, you're measuring things like what's the gestational age, which is essentially how big is the pregnancy in weeks now? What we call sphysophandial height, which is essentially between a symphysis born in a person to where the uterus is now at. It's able to tell us, is the pregnancy growing according towards, you know, ideal? We look at things like blood pressure, things like temperature, urine metabolites, different kind of parameters, which then gives us a bigger picture to, you know, how generally is the progression of the pregnancy. Is it following the norm? Is it outside of the norm? If it's outside, what intervention can we now put in, and all that? So those are some of just, you know, the things I have mentioned. So it is that kind of, you know, differentiation between demographics, the medical information, then what we call examination. So examination, this is now where our clinician is able to measure all these things I was mentioning, to say, is what does the scan say, all that. So those are the three kind of big umbrella terms I think the DOMAM has, and there are, you know, different parameters in each of the three umbrella terms.
Okay, great. So we heard a lot about the input data for the health app. What is the output? So DavaMom provides personalized information and advice to expectant mothers. How does such information and advice look like?
So for example, I'll give you, if a mother is anemic, which is essentially low blood, in layman's language, there are expected levels of hemoglobin a patient is supposed to have, which has been standardized to our region, to Zambia, after research of work. So for example, if a mother has an HB of 9.5 grams per deciliter, you know, the app is now able to, so it's encoded in terms of ranges. It knows that between 7 to 10 or between 7 to 9, that's intermediate risk. Between 9 to 10, that's low risk. Below 7, that's high risk. Below 4, that's dangerously high risk. So it's now able to, when the input, the data is inputted by the clinician to say, let's say some mother's HB is 9.5. When the advice is sent to the patient, it's interpreted in a layman's language because we're assuming we're communicating to layman mothers to say your blood level is, you know, pretty low. You need to start eating foods that have more iron, eat potatoes, eat supplements like your folic acid, your iron tablets. You know, it's simplified into that level, something practical they can actually do within their vicinity, so that it helps, you know, try to correct some of those disparities that may be happening.
Thanks. Can you tell us a little bit more on the journey that expectant mothers experience while using the DavaMom app?
So we've got to learn a lot over the 2 years we've been piloting this. So normally how the healthcare works in sub-Saharan Africa, which is our healthcare systems are very similar. I'll talk specifically aiming at Zambia. So how the healthcare system work is when a mother finds out that she's pregnant, she's supposed to go to a local clinic. At the local clinic, then she's able to get registered for antenatal. Then she's supposed to be coming after every 2 months, especially in the early days. Then every month in the second trimester. Then if they're high risk, they start coming about every week or every 2 weeks, depending on what the clinician has assessed. But the barrier that we got to see is what I mentioned earlier. Mothers present late. Some don't even present to antenatal. They just come late with complications. So what we got to do with Dawa Health was understand, you know, that there was that barrier for mothers presenting to the health clinic. So we needed to create a model that follows up the mother for them to register early in antenatal. So in Africa, what has been done over the years is create a special cadre of health workers called community health workers. So community health workers are not any specifically trained health workers. You know, these are people who usually have grade 12, which is equivalent to a high school diploma, maybe in the Western world, who get training for, you know, a couple of weeks. It can be a 6-week training program on how to just, you know, go and do mass sensitization in the communities for the importance of getting early healthcare and all these different programs. So that's the card that we have tapped into, because these are people who live in the communities, who understand the communities, who've been doing some programs even prior before we onboarded them. So they've kind of have that, you know, social capital trust they have in their communities as people who are known to be, oh, these people do health programs, health promotion programs. So what we did at Dawa Health is recruited these people. Once we recruited them, we trained them on what Dawa Health is all about, what services we offer. Then we incentivize them to go into communities and mobilize mothers to register for Dawa Mom, or which is essentially antenatal. So they go into the communities and they move in segments. In most of these slum communities, then they know, you know, they're known. So if someone, they're telling someone to say, we are running now in a mother's antenatal program. If you know any pregnant mothers, please refer them to us. You know, then mothers are able to go and be registered by the community healthcare workers. One, who's the mother? Where do they stay? And potentially how many weeks pregnant they are now. We get their phone number as well. Once we have that, the community health worker CADA then comes and gives us, you know, a report of all the mothers they've been registering. You know, we have a daily end of day a submission report. So let's say, for example, community health care worker is able to see 10 mothers in their community who are pregnant. They are able to submit those names on a collective, register we have online. Once we have that register, we are now able to follow up the mother because we know exactly their phone number, their names, how far are they in their pregnancy journey. Then once that's done, we are able to now go into the community. So we have mobile clinic vans, which are essentially, vans we have converted into clinics. So they're essentially clinics on wheels. And then they go into these communities. They go into central positions where mothers are now able to come. They get seen by our clinicians in the mobile clinic. Then once they are seen, they get their first antenatal. So we've seen that with that model, we are able to, you know, get mothers as early as the first month of pregnancy, second month, rather than the fourth, fifth, which helps us intervene early if anything is to happen. We then are able to refer them to, you know, higher centers where there are specialists, gynecologists and obstetricians, who might need, you know, special surgical procedures that we're not able to do within Dawa Health. But what Dawa Health is doing in that procedure is providing the first line primary healthcare, kind of frontline, screening platform. So once a mother comes to a mobile clinic, our clinicians have tablets, which the Dawa Mom app is on. So on that tablet, they're able to actually register the mother directly onto the app. So we've kind of reduced paperwork to what when we're actually onboarding the mother. So when the mother comes, we have their name, their phone number. We create an account for them using their phone number as the unique ID on the platform. So that's what, if now they have their own smartphone, they use that phone number as the unique ID to enter into their account. So their account now holds all the medical information they have. But on the platform, what we've additionally done is we push SMS notifications to the mother from the platform. So whether they have a due antenatal group appointment coming up or their result summary after each triage. So after triage, it takes about a minute to 2 minutes. The report is sent into the mother's account and an SMS is pushed on their phone number to say, you were seen today. This is your summary of what you need to do. If the mother is just okay, the summary will be very short in SMS form. You were seen today by the Dawa Health team. Your healthcare looks okay. You are healthy. Continue taking your supplements, whatnot. Then it's done. But if there's a special request that needs to be done, then an SMS just highlights that small message to say, your pregnancy is not going too well. You might need to be referred to another hospital. But if they go into their smartphone account, that's where all the detailed report is. So they're able to see, oh, this is how my blood pressure was. It was this over this. Is it high? Is it normal? Is it low? This was my HB level. This was what? So because that's what the clinician enters. After that's done, the mother is able to go home. If they are low risk, we see them after every month. So we see them after 4 weeks. If they're high risk, depending with the level of risk, if it's something we are able to control within our health, we are then able to intervene. If it's something beyond what my clinicians are able to handle, then we have to refer to either an advanced specialist hospital or a teaching hospital. So that's how the patient journey works. So after 4 weeks, they come again to be seen by our clinician. But now we've added now the provision of having the clinicians actually going to where the mothers are, because in our register, we know exactly where the mother stays. And we're able to map up, to say, okay, in this region, we have about 20 mothers, 30 mothers. So we can have a clinician go and do home-based visits for mothers who might not be able to come to our van or miss antenatal. So we're able to closely follow up and monitor the mothers, which is the value add we're really bringing, what is not being done by the public healthcare system. So that's the kind of extra layer of last mile care we've added into the patient care.
Thanks for the detailed description. That really sounds like a comprehensive system to bridge the last mile gap in maternal care. Now moving on to your network, where does DAVA Health currently operate? In which areas would you like to expand the network?
At the moment, DAVA Health is primarily working in slum communities. So slum communities, for maybe our listeners who have never been to sub-Saharan Africa before, these are high-packed informal settlements that usually happen when the rural-urban migration is happening. So when people are coming to look for better opportunities in the city and they don't find work, they end up settling just outside of the big cities in informal settlements. So you find that mostly it's informal shanks built around those communities. They're highly dense areas in terms of, human population that's there. The service usually is very poor as well, because these were not planned settlements. So there are no local clinics. If a local clinic comes after time, maybe it's a single clinic supporting a population of 300,000, for example, in one community we are working in. So that's not, practical, and it's not enough. So you find that a lot happens in these communities. You have a lot of teenage pregnancies that happen because of just how, the environment is built. So primarily that's where we are operating in. So it's between we call them peri-urban areas in terms of developmental analysis we give in this part of the world. So they have a lot of challenges that come with them. Why we are there? One, we chose those areas because of the population density that's there. We have greater impact per square kilometer because of the patients we are able to see, but also because of the challenges that exist in these communities. So that's the first rollout we have at the moment. What we are planning to do next is now move into the more rural areas where you have a different kind of challenge that comes with those kind of setups, because mostly in Africa, rural setups are very low density, kind of settlements with also poor infrastructure. So you have to have a different approach than what we are doing right now in the slum communities, which is something in the pipeline. So yeah, we are planning maybe over the next 2 years, we'd have started expanding into the more rural setup of Africa, where you have, these really underserved populations with possibly very minimum disposable income, which is a different approach to the slum communities where you have high density populations with a bit of disposable incomes, but with its own set of challenges that come with that. So we're in Zambia at the moment, just started early pilots in Zimbabwe. We are hoping to continue expanding across the region because the healthcare systems are very similar in terms of challenges that are there, in terms of opportunities that are also there. So that's our kind of expansion and growth strategy over the next few years.
For our listeners, the AI side of DAVA Health is particularly interesting. Hence, can you tell us more about the AI system that is used to detect expectant mothers at risk?
So at the moment, I think we are using about three different models of AI. We are just incorporating the fourth just now. So the first one is an NLP-based model, which is in our chatbot. So we've developed an NLP-powered chatbot, which incorporated GenAI as well. So in the background, we're using Helm's AI models, but we have superimposed our own training on top to tailor it to healthcare. So what we've done over the years, we created a protocol support document, which is translated now into about 7 languages. So this document, I set together with a medical team and experts. We were using our local protocols in the country and just some of the traditional knowledge we have in the community. For example, like I said, tailoring the advice to what people actually are having in their daily lives, like maybe, eat potatoes, eat sweet potatoes, eat maize, because we know the nutritional content in all these foods. We were tailoring that, even if it's biomedical advice, we were tailoring it to some practical, advice in our communities. So we created a very comprehensive document that gives women advice from day of conception, which is the day they get pregnant, until 3 months after they've gotten pregnant. So we initially created the document in English. Then I had to bring in medical experts who were natives of, this different local dialects or local languages, who were translating that English document into their local, language, because one, they have the medical expertise, but they're also a native of that language. So they know how to translate it exactly into the kind of document we wanted. So after we had done that, we had a comprehensive, amount of literature that was in local language and English. That's what we then gave as input data into the NLP bot to train it on the kind of advice it's able to give. So now if a mother is able to ask a medical question in her local languages, it's able to go into all that data sets it has of all the 7 languages we've done so far. We are hoping to do more. Then it's able to give a very tailored language support, which is actually correct, one in translation, but also in the medical advice it's giving to the mother. So that's one way we have incorporated AI into the advice, into our model. So this bot is available over our WhatsApp, over our app, over our social media inboxes as well, Facebook, Messenger, Telegram, which are some of the most used social media platforms in Zambia. So if a mother texts our chatbot line, they're able to get all that support information from that. So that's one layer of AI we've incorporated. The second layer of AI, which is now the risk prediction platform, it's primarily using parameters from what the clinician enter. So it takes information from the demographics, which is to say, it's the data set. So it's a combination of data set. One, what we are generating in-house as we give this service, but also some of the data sets we got on open source platforms like Kegel. So we're able to incorporate all those 2 data sets into now what the Dalmam predictive platform does. So it's able to take demographics, for example, to say it's a 17-year-old or 15-year-old pregnant girl who comes from a very poor, community. This is the kind of partner she has. What's her, risk factors? Like, has she had any problems in the previous pregnancy? What is the BP currently?
Sorry, can you state which input data the risk models use without using abbreviations, since some of our listeners might not understand those?
Okay, so I said there is one, like the age, it looks at previous risk factors in the last pregnancy. It looks at things like blood pressure, which is essentially what's the blood pressure reading. It looks at things like HB, so that's the level of blood, which is what we call hemoglobin. It's hemoglobin level, which is essentially level of blood. It looks at things like, what's the sphysophandial height, which is essentially how big is the pregnancy tummy. There's a measurement we are able to do on that. So after just taking all those parameters, it's able to predict 4 risk. At the moment, it's only limited to 4 risk factors. or a potential risk in pregnancy. So first one is postpartum hemorrhage, which is essentially hemodynamic instability that happens after a woman has given birth. So if you either lose a lot of blood or you've given birth when your blood was already low, you know, you're at risk of developing this problem, which is a postpartum hemorrhage, which is the leading cause of mortality, by the way, in Africa. So it's able to predict to say, is this patient at risk of developing postpartum hemorrhage? Then after postpartum hemorrhage, there's what we call hypertensive disorders. There's a condition called preeclampsia and eclampsia, which is essentially end organ damage that start happening in a pregnant woman because of the pregnancy itself. So that takes in account of things like the blood pressure, some of the metabolites that come in from the urine. It's able to analyze to say what's the risk potential of this woman becoming preeclampsic or having this hypertensive disorder, which can even progress to a woman now having fits and they can die from that. So that's another second risk it looks at and predicts to say what's the risk level of a pregnant woman developing this. The third risk level it predicts is what we call obstructed labor. So it's able to tell, is this patient able to deliver this child vaginally or they'll need a C-section? So from the parameters you enter into the app, it's able to say this patient won't be able to give birth vaginally. So transfer them to a more advanced center because they need a cesarean section. That's one of the third risk parameter it looks at. Then the last one essentially looks at potential outcomes of the child. Is this child at risk of developing any complications on birth, which would indicate a mother needing to have a cesarean kind of section? So it takes all the different parameters. So it takes a combination of parameters for each prediction it's making. Accuracy is still maybe around 70 to 80% at the moment. We are still trying to improve the accuracy. The more we get more data, the better we improve, you know, the prediction level. So this is the second kind of how AI has been incorporated into our platform. So when the clinician are entering the data, it then gives them that those risk scores. Then they're able to manage accordingly. Then the third layer where we have entered AI is on the diagnostic end. So we have collaborated with different number of partners. So one company we are partnered with is called Delft Imaging from the Netherlands. So they've created AI-powered ultrasound scans that use a smartphone app to be able to predict, you know, if the baby is okay, if the placenta is low, which I was explaining earlier. Say if a placenta is low, that's a risk for postpartum hemorrhage. So those patients usually are supposed to be delivered at higher centers. But because it's a local clinic where ultrasounds are not available, we've incorporated now this smartphone-based AI scans where we are giving the phones to our clinicians who don't have any special training in ultrasound techniques. But because it's AI-powered, it's an easy-to-use sweep procedure they just do. Then it's able to tell you, you know, if the placenta is okay, what's the estimated size of the baby, if the baby will pass, all that. So we've incorporated this into the diagnostic area as well. Then another company we have incorporated on the AI diagnostic part, it's called NIADA, which is from the US. So they are using AI-based smartphone app to see if a patient has low blood. So rather than the invasive traditional procedure we do at clinics, where you have to prick someone, get their blood, send it to a lab, then you're able to get a result to say, oh, okay, your HB is 9 or it's 10. It's now a smartphone camera-based. So a patient comes in, they reflect their eyelid, you take a picture, then it's able to analyze that picture of the eyelid to say what's the level of hemoglobin. So it has helped us, one, reduce the invasive procedure, but also make this test accessible to the last mile, where you don't have complicated labs. You know, it's simple tools like smartphones, which are now helping our clinicians to be able to identify some of these high-risk mothers. So these are kind of the three layers of how we've incorporated AI into our model, which is now helping the clinicians who don't have any special training, one, but also the last mile mother who would normally not have access to some of this diagnostic advice or diagnostic tools to now be, you know, appropriately managed at the right time. So that's how the AI is incorporated into the whole model.
And which AI models are used for the second and the third pillar? Do you know this?
For the second pillar, it's a customized AI model that's using a combination of convolutional neural networks. Even the last layer, it's convolutional neural networks. So for example, DELFT, the partnership we are having with them is we are getting as much local ultrasound scans as we can get, which are then translated by convolutional neural networks to create data sets, the one that are local to Zambia, but also goes into the model to improve the accuracy of, you know, what the scan is actually able to pick, because of how unique some of our patients are in the region. Then NIADA is the same. So they have created convolutional neural networks with data sets from India, the US, and we are their first African partner who's developing the data set for African patients in terms of, you know, what the picture quality or the level of redness in the eyelid to what it converts to HB. So it's actually both, you know, an interventional study that's creating the data set and also helping with last mile diagnostics. So that's some of the neural networks that are being used in the second pillar and last pillar.
Great. Thank you so much for the detailed descriptions. Now I would like to talk more about entrepreneurship and your startup per se and about the funding. So in general, how is your project funded and how do you want to keep a sustainable business?
That's a very interesting question I've thought about for a while now. So initially when we started, we were purely a grant-funded project, but grants are not sustainable for impact. That's the philosophy I have. So we have transitioned from purely a grant-funded startup or grant-funded solution to actually evolve into a sustainable health tech innovation we are building. So we are able to balance between the cost of the service we are trying to provide, which sometimes it's subsidized by some of the grants we're able to get, but it's still, you know, a private healthcare solution that's complementing what, you know, the Minister of Health or the Minister of Health across the region are doing. So we charge minimum fees for what our patients are able to afford, you know, which range from as low as 50 cents in terms of US dollars to maybe the most expensive thing we offer is maybe $12, which is not, you know, if you're comparing the price standard with, you know, prices in the Western world, that's really low. But in our communities, that's quite a significant amount of money because the incomes are not that much. But the services are affordable enough for, you know, the kind of target populations we are looking at. But also our thesis behind, you know, longevity of the solution is that if we are able to, you know, provide a service that allows, you know, those people who are in the maybe upper lower segment or upper, you know, poor segment who afford something, it creates room on the local clinics for the patients who really don't afford to pay for anything. Then now they're able to go to local government clinics because the traffic there has been reduced by the Dow Health model, because those who afford a bit are taking advantage of the service offering we have. So that's how funding has been, the model we now have. So it's a combination of grant funding, like I mentioned, and raising the money from actual providing care as a service to patients who are paying for different, tests or services along the other care journey. So that's how we're able to sustain, or we believe we'll sustain it long term.
Yes, we know it's not easy being an entrepreneur and keeping a sustainable business. So thanks a lot for giving us a detailed description about the app and Ava Health in general. It was really nice talking to you, and I'm looking forward to have you join our podcast again and in our next episode talk about bias in maternal care and entrepreneurship with you. So thank you so much and see you soon. Bye.